This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Byram out of the corner, Kulik up top, scores! What a shot! Jiří Kulik! And it's 5-1 Buffalo.
Got to take away to win to end the season. I mean, you celebrate the little things when you're in a 14-year playoff drought, but that's sometimes just how it's got to be. Welcome back in. Special edition of Sports Talk Saturday, carrying on here. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, now joined by Brian Koziel, your pregame, intermission, postgame host among these airwaves. Mm-hmm. Brian, you do the yeoman's work around here. You host for basically every single Sabres game. And here is the end of its season.
It is. It's too bad. The first game is Winnipeg and St. Louis at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
We should be doing like extended pregame right now for game one here tonight.
We should.
Yeah, and that would be great.
That would be awesome. Phenomenal.
Yeah, it would be a great time. I'm ready for the day that it finally gets unleashed because we will be in mass at that point. Like one of us is probably joining you in the press box, or if it's a road game, there's some extended you've got extra people helping you host at this point. One day, Brian, one day.
Yeah, I think that, back in the day, the last time the Sabres played a playoff series, I remember we did extended postgame until midnight. And then what we would do is we would replay the game at midnight. You know how MSG replays the game on, an encore? We would replay the game and then replay postgame. And then Howard at the time, of course, Howard and Jeremy were hosting. They would come in at 5 a.m. instead of 6 a.m. So it was that 5-hour window And then we would start and it would just go all day. And it was great because you'd have the game from the previous night to talk about and break down and hear interviews from and hear sound bites from. And then you'd have, obviously media from the other team that would be in town. So you'd have all those sort of other things to talk about. And then the next day, it would essentially be, a 6 a.m. till puck drop pregame show, and then the next day you'd come in and we'd do it again. And it was awesome. And every single, break back, we'd have sound bites from the players or highlights from the game. And it was just, it was really, really good. This, Twitter and social media wasn't as prevalent as it was back in 2011.
God, can only imagine.
I can't even imagine how people would be overreacting, both good and bad, to what it would be now if the Sabres were in the postseason. And I keep telling, younger people, hey, not only was it incredible to be inside that arena, but I said there was also another 10,000 outside of the arena. They had the party in the plaza.
I remember those.
And people would just, and of course, because playoffs, it's usually obviously this time of year or later, as the Sabres advanced, when they went to those back-to-back conference finals, the weather would get better and better. I mean, it would be pretty rowdy down there, and the Sabres did a wonderful job. They'd set up a stage with a band, and they'd set up concessions and tents. And I mean, you're outside watching hockey on a huge screen, and it was 70 degrees out. How awesome is that? And I remember that, the TV coverage of the game would cut away to show the fans outside after a goal or something. Yep. And it would be bonkers. And
it would be bonkers.
I mean, that
as
that
one of those people standing outside, I can confirm all these things were were happening. It was a different age ago. Now I'm a professional talking about them. And
that was 14 years ago. So yeah. Think about how the setup would be so much even better today, improved, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Joe and I, especially with how rowdy this show can get sometimes, we'd be probably the perfect little MCs for outside at that point.
Yeah. I can only, what you're describing to me is the most phenomenal work of fiction I've ever heard, because I do not have any recollection of that with my age, unfortunately, you know? So it's like, this team has just been upsetting and frustrating for most of my life, being able to intake hockey games. So I dream of that day.
Yeah, it'll come. It's just how long we have to wait. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know for the Bills, it lasted 17 seasons. This drought to me feels worse than the Bills, because the Bills played in a league that, remember, 7 wild cards were not the case during the drought. It was only 6. I'm sorry, 7 playoff teams in the conference. Well, you know, they added a wild card recently, but for most of the drought, it was only, you know, the division winners and 2 wild cards. So you had 6 make it from, 16? So it felt a little bit more like it was a bigger accomplishment to make the playoffs. To me, in the NHL, you literally just draw the line in the sand halfway. Half make it, half don't. And to think that 14 seasons in a row that could possibly happen, and I understand that, you know, it's not a 50-50 proposition when rosters are, you know, if everybody's roster was deemed to be equal, then it would be a 50-50 thing. But, I mean, if it was, think about that. It would be 50, one half to the 14th power, and you don't have to teach math to know that that's an extremely, 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 extremely small number in terms of a chance for the Sabres to miss it consecutively,
yeah,
for 14 years in a row. Like, that just, it doesn't seem possible. At one point, you think you would get lucky. At one point, another team falls off. Oh, well, this is where you step in. No, other teams filled that void. And this year, how many times, Derek, have you and I talked on a Saturday about, well, look, nobody wants to win the wild card in the East.
Oh, my God. Even up to the last day, Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, and got the
Montreal
win that they
finished
needed.
With 91.
Yeah,
Montreal finished with 91. I mean, that is a total that we know the Sabres 2 years ago had, and Florida had 92. Unfortunately,
yeah. But this year, I would have killed for 91 points.
This year was there for the taking, and the entire East, the bottom half of the East, nobody finished strong. Even when there was that glimmer of hope about a month out, when we were sitting here thinking, remember when Lindy did the 5-game increment goal, let's go 3-1-1 in each 5 games, that'll get you to 89 or 87. But other than a strong finish from Columbus, Montreal was the only team. And we kept saying, you know, it's doable, but the problem is there's so many teams in the way.
You had to jump everyone. And the Sabres were playing at a point up until like the last 4 games. They were playing at a clip where they would vault a bunch of teams up the standings if they kept going. And by the time they officially got eliminated, then it was, okay, then they lose 3 straight. I was very interested to see if they would actually alter the Atlantic division. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they went 0-3 against those teams. But, Brian, I feel like you called your shot on Boston, but I think you did it nearby a monkey's paw, by the way, where the Sabres, they did finally finish ahead of Boston in the standings. The problem is the Bruins used a 10-game losing streak near the end of the year to fall below Buffalo and said, hey, you got your wish.
Yeah, and traded away their captain, too,
yeah,
in Marchand. Yeah, I think I nailed it that Buffalo was going to finish ahead of Boston, except
you were near a monkey's paw.
Yep. You played the recording from 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Yes, finally the Sabres finished ahead of Boston. I was right. Finally the year the Bruins fell back. Yeah, minus 50 goal differential for the Bruins. Pretty, pretty sad. But, you know, if you want to sit here and say, okay, you know, besides going down, it's always fun to go down memory lane and think how much fun it was. But if we don't want to try and depress ourselves into oblivion here with this Sabres organization.
Yes, I try to make it a little bit more engaging in that way.
Right. What can we sit here and think about? Well, what maybe can give us a glimmer of hope? Well, I mean, we always look at goal differential usually is the one where you draw the line in the sand. And most years, the teams that are positive are the teams that the 8 that are in, and the negative are the 8 teams that are out. If you want to have any silver lining in here, now the Sabres were minus 20. That's not great. But Montreal was minus 20, and they were the last team in. So they weren't that far behind. Regulation wins. Montreal had 30. Buffalo had 29. So there's only one difference of regulation wins there. They early in the season, finding ways. Paul always makes this point, and I agree with it. You have to find ways on nights when you don't have your best stuff, or find ways on nights where you start poorly or you blow a lead, but you still got to figure out a way, hey, we have to get this to overtime so we can at least get the loser point in, even if we don't end up with a win in the end. And last year, remember, the Islanders had that historic, terrible run to the playoffs that we got to see them in the playoffs.
Yep.
Wonderful. And they had, like, what, 17 loser points or something like that? Like, something insane.
Yeah, they were merchants for that loser point last season. It was bad.
This year, it was no different. They had 12.
Yeah. But look at the loser points.
Which was the second most in the league.
Yeah, the Sabres have 7. And, you know, how many have less in the East? Carolina, Florida, and Toronto. Well, Florida and Toronto had so many regulation wins, they didn't need any of the loser points. But, I mean, there's only 3 teams with less. Like, again, that still has to be something that, you know, I'm not putting it at the top of the list, but as we sit here and debate, like, well, what has to be better for next year? Like, I would still put that on my list. They still have to be better about figuring out the way that they can get a close game to that overtime position where they can obviously still fight to get the second point, but try to get that loser point number up. That's been too low for them for many, many years during the stretch.
Furthermore, Brian, there was a game. It was game number 2 of the now infamous 13-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. It was the most promising game when it came to you got a point when you really shouldn't have. They play a great game against Minnesota. They get blanked 1-0. But then the next game is against Vancouver. And that is a game, I remember talking to you about it, saying that's exactly what we've been talking about. They did not have their best hockey, and they found their way to overtime. They ultimately lost because they barely touched the puck in overtime, but they still managed to steal a point when they had no business to, and it's like, okay, maybe things will actually look a little different. For me, let's actually put something in this of, like, what can we look at here to actually try to cheer people up? And honestly, I'd have to say some of it has to come down to the attitude of locker cleanout this weekend. There have been a lot of interesting answers from a lot of players. J.J. Paterka pointing out that his body language was not all that good, like acknowledging it publicly. I have a player like Jason Zucker saying that this place is not as bad as people do seem to make it out to be. Like, he played in Arizona, and like how you couldn't sell at a college hockey arena. There are worse environments to be in. Mm-hmm. And Rasmus and Tage both saying they're playing off of each other as leaders in the locker room, and sometimes things will get heated, but they respect each other enough to call out players and each other when things are not going the right way.
And even I would put Bo Byram in that mix. He didn't want to really talk contract at all over the course of the season.
That's right,
when
yeah.
asked about him. And then he said, you know, today that he would be open to being back here. So that's a good sign if you're a Bo Byram fan that he said, yes, for sure, I could see him being here long term. Now, Byram, if the Sabres can do what you and I talked about, you know, previous weeks, that they need to find a partner for Owen Power. Well, if they can do that, that to me, that it double checks a box. Not only do you hopefully it makes Power better, it makes the second pair better, but that allows Byram to play with Dahlin, which is when we clearly saw a big elevation in his game. And, it, you know, relying solely on playing with somebody doesn't mean you are incapable of playing without him, or that this is the only way it has to be. But why not? If Bo Byram plays like an all-star, if he's paired with Rasmus Dahlin, well, Dahlin needs to play with somebody. So if he looks like an all-star playing with another all-star, then why not? Like, you know, it's kind of this, what is it, the square peg into the circle hole thing? Like, I understand, like, if Byram looks so much better with a better player, of course, everybody would look better, you know, playing with Rasmus Dahlin. We know that. But if he's going to play at literally what looks like to be an all-star level or close to it or very, very good, then somebody's got to play with him. So why not? I don't have a problem with that if that's ultimately where we think he fit it. It complements his game best, especially if you go out now and make a move and get somebody to play with Power. Now you have 2 very, very, very solid pairs, and I'm feeling much better about the Sabres' defense going into next season. And Byram has also shown that he can play legitimately the same minutes, the insane minutes that Dahlin plays too. So if you want to play them 2 out of every 3 shifts, you can. And Lindy Ruff likes to do that too. So I'm not against. I know people want to say don't give Byram a contract. He wasn't good when he wasn't with Dahlin. But hey, if he's the person that's perfectly fit for it to play with him and he handles it great, I understand you're going to change pairs, you're going to change lines. But I mean, if that's ultimately what makes Byram tick and be magical on the ice, then so what? Somebody's got to play with him. Put him with him. Let it be a great top pair for this team.
Not just Byram. Like, if Byram plays best with Dahlin and allows Dahlin to continue being Dahlin, why anchor him with someone else?
Yeah.
If Dahlin has his best player playing alongside him and that player has a bad time away from him, Dahlin could play with mostly anybody. Yes. But tell me there's a vast difference between Bowen Byram and Matias Samuelsson, and everyone will agree with that. So, yeah, no, it kind of makes sense, not just for Byram's sake at that point, but also, yeah, no, you have a steady pair for Dahlin, and then in case of injury, a new top four defender can help out with that. Bernard Docker could probably move up the lineup, and you're allowed to help out in that way. It's not about, oh, you shuffle pairs all the time. No. It's about you give Dahlin the locking of him and Byram, and you give power somebody there, and if you have to change things from injury, you could do that.
I agree. And Bernard Docker, just, you know, I guess a small token of positive vibes. I thought he was good. And
very steady.
He is a former number one pick. So there potentially can be a higher ceiling with him. Potentially the change of scenery could maybe have just, you know, done wonders for him. Press the reset button. Maybe he can be in your bottom pair. I think that, you know, I thought he showed some signs of playing the role that you'd want from your bottom pair. There was rare a time that he played here in these last, you know, 20 or so games that I sat there and say, well, man, he just was totally out of position, like we've said with other Sabres defensemen. So, I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to vault up to your top pair, but you do need someone to play in your third pair, and I thought he handled it pretty well with the fact that he came in with a strong skill set and a high ceiling grade of being a first-round draft pick. I mean, look at the Sabres. You have Byram, first-round draft pick. On D, I'm talking here. Byram, first-round draft pick. Dahlin, first overall draft pick. Power, first overall draft pick. Bernard Docker, first-round draft pick. I mean, four of your six, again, not necessarily in that order, but you've got four guys that at least have the pedigree to be good or be great, or be, you know, in Dahlin's case, you're hoping maybe even Hall of Fame at some point. So now you just got to fill in the other two. I'm not convinced that Jacob Bryson is in that 5-6 pair. I would like him to be 7 or even 8. I'm not saying he's not good for the organization. I think he can be a good fill-in here and there. I don't know if I want him to be a regular 82-game player. I know he is re-signed for next year, so he's into the equation somewhere. But I think he's probably, I guess my ideal world, he's 7 to start the season next year.
Brian, just to pivot for a second, I just have a question. The coaching staff has been conversationally, I guess, it's been brought up to make some changes, let Lindy Ruff pick his own staff. Is that in one of the 32 thoughts, right, was staff changes, but that's just front office staff. Do you see any coaching staff changes maybe being made with Lindy Ruff?
I would think he's going to do something, yes. I think even symbolically it gives the message that this year wasn't acceptable. From Lindy's aspect, he can't control the roster, but he definitely can control maybe some of the assistants he's with. So I think ultimately, yes, I think you will see a couple of moves there, and it could be shifting here and there, kind of even like what Elliot Friedman said, maybe could be happening with the front office. So I'm fairly certain we would see a question today about that with Lindy Ruff. So that's a piece of this upcoming press conference that we're going to air here that I feel like will get asked, and I'm looking forward to hearing about what does Lindy think about that, because that was definitely a topic coming into last year of, hey, was Lindy forced to keep all the assistants? Like, how did that play out? So I think that'll be asked today, I'm sure, and I'm curious to see what Lindy has to say about it. I think, I mean, I would be shocked if Seth Appert was a part of any sort of move. I think the Sabres organization and Lindy have all said positive things that maybe someday he could be the heir apparent whenever Lindy decides to step aside. But at least for this moment, I don't see him necessarily being a part of what could be upcoming changes. We know Buffalo's power play has definitely been an issue. And you look at special teams, power play and penalty kill definitely are numbers that have to go up for next year in terms of their percentages in the good ways. And if they can do that, I think that's another piece. Now, does that mean you bring in a different assistant coach to help with that process? I think that could possibly be the case. But yeah, I think we'll hear from Lindy today. I'm excited to see what he has to say about it.
And speaking of with Ruff and Adams in particular, with the fact that we know that they're speaking, obviously they're going to be here. The speculation coming from Friedman, because he didn't really phrase it like it was a report, that Adams might have a shift in his role as well. Could it be? It was very fascinating, the language on that.
Yeah, it sounded more like, I guess you'd say,
speculative.
His opinion.
Yeah.
Or just, hey, well, I'm hearing that. So maybe this could lead to this. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a report. I agree with you.
Speculative is probably the right way to say it. Because, like, Friedman's very careful with his words. He doesn't ever want anything to be misleading. And I typically will take that at face value from him on that. But it would be interesting to see if there is a change for Kevin Adams, if there is something where there's a shift in his role, so where he's not the day-in, day-out general manager, but even still able to sign off on everything as the president of Hockey Ops.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, because fans that have been clamoring for this president of hockey operations, we really haven't had it with Terry Pegula in charge, and you wonder, you know, if essentially he'd be bringing in another GM by doing that. I mean, by changing titles with Adams, like, I don't know. Does that give him still the same power? Does that give him a different role?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be real curious if there is something to that thought, that there might be some sort of repositioning or renaming or things like that. But Pegula has given us no indication that he needs a president of hockey operations. So that's why I'm still very, very myself thinking that while it's fair to speculate of what was said by Elliot Friedman there, my gut says no, that Pegula will not necessarily add somebody there. I mean, I think he doesn't. Strike me as the person that enjoys this streak and enjoys losing. I mean, he was there quite a bit during the down the stretch here. I mean, I could see if he's in the press box with Kevin Adams, and he was, I would say, more often than not there at the games. So you'd love to be able to figure out what is he thinking during these games when maybe it's not going well. But ultimately, how much does he want to make change, knowing that there is a bottom line, that there are contracts to pay? Does he want to have to pay another person that's fired? All these sort of things. I could see a repositioning before I could see a firing, for sure. I think that if you said Kevin Adams is going to have a change, I could see the repositioning over the firing.
And it would also kind of make some sense, Brian, if we're going to continue speculating on this sort of thing. The rapport that he has with Pegula would then make it where, maybe the owner is comfortable with the president because he does talk with Kevin Adams every day. And mm-hmm. there is this rapport with them.
Right.
So there's
a camaraderie between the two.
It would be something where, like, Terry doesn't have to constantly, be checking in. He has someone that he trusts in that position to give the final okays on everything. And then a new general manager would come in. And it's odd because with Adams, my biggest frustrations with him are not about the moves that he actually makes. It is that I don't ever get the sense that he strikes when the iron is hot or when he should. You look at the two biggest infractions, the offseason two years ago, when they come off of 91 points and they just missed the postseason, but they look like one of the most young and up-and-coming teams in hockey. And then two, not doing anything during the 13-game losing streak.
And he owned up to that 13-game losing streak piece
earlier
this week when he was on with Shope and the Bulldog. Yeah,
back on the deadline, too, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll hear that again today. And I think we'll hear from Lindy twice during a post-game show. Hmm. He said it the other night against Philly, and I think he also said it the night that they were officially eliminated. He said the 13-game losing streak. He used the word killed us twice, I remember. That was like his quote, killed us, which obviously is the case. And Adams has said, look, looking back at it, I should have done something. And I think to go up until the trade deadline, the only transaction Kevin Adams had done the entire time before you got into trade deadline area time was waiving and reclaiming of James Reimer. That was it. Like, there wasn't even a wave until we had Obey Cobell get waived. So it was a long, long stretch where the roster was exactly the same, and Lindy can only do so much with obviously the tools you're given there. I was very, very thinking at some point there that Kevin Adams had to make a move. Now, we know in the middle of that, there's two moments of that winless streak, too, that there was maybe the timing would have been right. The night you mentioned the Vancouver game, which kind of, you know, what was that? The second or the, maybe the second, or the third one?
It was the second game of that losing streak. Yeah. I remember
then the beginning
of that losing streak intimately somehow, that they played some of their best hockey in a losing streak that you could.
Yeah. Then you get to the Colorado game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is maybe the season, the symbol of that streak.
Mm-hmm.
Is the you're up 4-0 at home against a very good Colorado team, and you end up obviously blowing it. Not only do you give back the lead, but you lose the game, but you lose it in regulation. Like, and it's the worst loss at home in the history of the franchise, and you lose that game by a 5-4 margin. I mean, that is just, I mean, incredible. The fact that that happened. I mean, Buffalo is up 4-0 after one. And by the way, Colorado only gets one in the second period.
Yeah, it's 4-1.
So you're going into the
third.
Right. The 4-0 lead you blow after one is bad. But I might even say just equally as bad is that you were up 3 going into the third, and you couldn't even get the loser point.
Yeah, like, it's the fact
gave
you lost
up
4 in regulation.
Right. There was no empty net goal either.
No.
Because it was tied, and then obviously Colorado took the lead. So, and they scored the last one with 4.5 minutes to go. So it wasn't even like there was anything crazy there. We're like, oh my God, they got two goals with the goalie pulled and it was 6-on-3 or something. Like, no, it happened kind of in a normal hockey fashion. That obviously, I thought on post game that night when I, and Paul Hamilton is sitting here saying, historically, this is the worst loss in team history, a team regular season. Like, you know, he's,
yep,
going through this, and I'm thinking, like, Paul, you're backing, you know, I'm sensing how bad this is, and then Paul is telling me this, and it's like, it's in my head. I'm like, well, maybe there's a move to be made. Maybe Kevin Adams tomorrow is going to waive this person or trade this person, or maybe there'll be a change in one of the coaching staffs or things like that. Nothing. And then the other moment during the 13-game winless streak, guys, that I thought was also probably, for me, symbolic of that trip was, remember the night before the Montreal game,
mm-hmm,
Terry Pegula flies to Montreal to talk to the team.
Oh, yes.
And gives them what was reported to be a vote of confidence. Essentially, you know, obviously there's no real official report. Nobody was in the room. But essentially, we were hearing that it was essentially like, hey, guys, I guess what has been paraphrased, people had been saying, was like, the solution's in the room, right?
Yep.
Like, in other words, I'm not telling Kevin there must be a move made today. And the Sabres came out, and Montreal scored 19 seconds into that game.
Well,
and it was 2-0, yeah. 6:26 into the game, and they ended up getting blasted 6-1. And that also, by the way, springboarded Montreal.
Yes.
That got them going, mm-hmm, and they went on a nice streak there afterwards, and that was the 11th straight loss for Buffalo out of the 13.
They would proceed to lose two more with, you got swept this year by Toronto. That's something that even bad Sabres teams have not done, and that was another one. You gave up 6 there at home against Toronto, and then you lose against Boston, and then they took all their frustrations out on the Islanders.
Yeah. And then won 3 in a row after that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the offense seemed to wake up. 7-1, 6-2, 4-2, those next two games after that. Next three games after that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in that streak, Kevin Adams should have done something, and he didn't. That Red Wings game, remember, they were up,
yes,
and blew it. So there's another game in there. I mean, just, but to me, that the Montreal game, when your owner is there and you came out as flat as you could have, and then the previous, and then the Colorado, as Paul said, the historically worst loss in the regular season in this team's franchise history. Like, this team's been here since 1970 and you play 82 games a year. Like, that's a lot of games. And for Paul to just say, yep, that was the worst loss in this building or as a home team in this franchise's history. Like, that's a pretty powerful statement to make. But man, did it send this team into a slide for sure. And Kevin Adams definitely has to be on the hook for not doing anything. Lindy Ruff can only scratch so many guys and can only give you so many different line combinations. The GM didn't do anything there, and it definitely was needed. And I will 100% agree with Lindy. He said it killed us, and I think it did. It really did. It took them months to get themselves back to playing any sort of semblance of what we thought was decent hockey.
Yeah, it's tough. And
the wind came out of the sails quick.
That's how it happens. And like a lot of us have said at this point, and Brian, you mentioned it at the top of the 12 o'clock hour, that this one felt like a slower finish than ever because that losing streak happened and they were in last place and they could not get themselves out of it for 3.5 months.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the middle of December and we're saying it's over. Like, that just... And look,
it's not right.
No wonder the players for the next month or two, like, just kind of, I'm not saying there wasn't full effort, but no wonder there wasn't like just this drive and this force of let's figure this out. Like, they knew, like, guys, we got 50 games left here. Like, what are we going to do? Kind of thing. I get it. They're human beings. So again, that goes back, well, who can help them through this? Well, the coach and the GM. Well, the coach can only do so much if the GM isn't going to change the roster. So ultimately, they had to wait all the way until March before Kevin Adams really made the next move to give themselves a different look.
Well, we've got ourselves a little roundtable going on here, but what do you say we come back from a break? We hear from the locker room once more. We do, I believe, have Josh Norris up on the docket. Is that right, Brian?
Yeah, Josh Norris spoke just with Paul earlier today. Now, there's an addition that you might hear Kevin Adams talk about today for next year when people keep saying about how you're going to get a top six forward. To me, Josh Norris just being healthy does not qualify as that checking the box. Mm-hmm. There has to be something else beyond that. Now, if you have a healthy Josh Norris and you have another player added to your top six, okay. Now I'm excited about where the forwards are on this team. But to me, just saying, well, Josh Norris being healthy come September is going to be our addition to the top six. Like, I don't buy that. That's not enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, but we'll hear from him, and we'll see what he had to say from Locker Cleanout coming up next here. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, Brian Koziel, we are hanging around here, live and local, until Kevin Adams and Lindy Ruff speaking approximately 4:30. We'll see what happens here. It's an extended edition of Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Welcome back. Extended edition of Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, Brian Koziel now joining in on the troop. Evan DePasquale on the board here. A big old day from him because he was with Brian at the start with Tita Green. So it's been an early day for him, a long day for him, and he's going to help us kick it to the locker room now with Sabres center Josh Norris.
Well, Josh, when we chatted with you about a month or so ago, you were hoping to be back by the end of the year. What kind of held you up that you just weren't able to do it?
My oblique. It was a torn oblique. But I'm feeling good now. It was that happened originally, and then when I got here, it kind of just kept getting worse. I probably came back a little early originally, and back in February, and then just, you know, didn't really get better. So, but I'm feeling good now.
Sorry about that. How long have you been dealing with that? I know you said you were dealing with that before, but do you know when that happened? How long?
I don't know exactly. I think it was like maybe February 1st, something like early February. And then, yeah, I came back, like I said, a little earlier and just kind of flared up again. So,
Josh, if the Sabres were in the playoffs now, how close are you to being able to play?
I'd be pretty close. Yeah.
So the season ended and you were relatively, you weren't going to make it, but it wasn't like months away either.
No, it wasn't months away. It's just something where I think if you play with that, you know, especially at this stage of the season, then, you know, you could really mess your summer training up and skating and, yeah, I didn't think it was, you know, it was worth that, especially given my history the last couple of years, not being able to train properly and things like that because of my shoulder. I thought it was important that this summer was a healthy one and one that I can, you know, not have to worry about any injuries, you know.
They only got to see you in three games, of course, so I assume the conversation with Lindy and Kevin was all about this has to be a good summer so that you're ready to go in camp, and that's your mindset too, I assume, right? Is it's going to be all about the summer for you to show them what you have come September?
Yeah, it's a big summer for me. Big summer for everyone. I'm excited to just be healthy and be able to train and skate and not have to worry about anything. So yeah, it's definitely a big summer. I'm excited for it.
How do you keep positive dealing with all of these issues? What keeps your head up? Because this is it's so much and it has to be so frustrating.
Like the injuries, you mean?
Like the shoulder and now the oblique and everything.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of go one way. Like, especially when you're dealing with the shoulder stuff. Like, I don't want to talk about it, but since you asked, it's either you know, kind of fold and, you know, you don't really want to work that hard to come back, or you know, you do everything you can to get back to where you need to be and be the player you want to be, and that's, you know, what I want to do. So it's pretty black and white. That's really how I think about it.
Josh, when you got here, you know, right before the trade deadline, the team was still trying to find its way, but over this last 5 to 6 weeks, they really started to get to the identity they want to play with. What were your observations, not only about just their team game, but I mean, you got to know some of the players and their skill sets and their strengths over the last 6 weeks. And, you know, how does that make you feel going into the offseason, looking ahead to, you know, the future?
Yeah, they played some really good hockey, you know, down the stretch. And, yeah, it's definitely something to build off of going into the summer. Just the, you know, the consistency thing is something that, you know, obviously we want to get better at, and you know, having a certain identity that we want to bring into every game, and I definitely think they did a great job, you know, going into the summer to do that. You know, I don't like sitting up here talking about it because I didn't play, you know, so they were doing all the work, but I thought they did a good job down the stretch.
Did you stick around the rink longer than you normally would when you were rehabbing? Like, how did you just kind of acclimate when you were injured, I guess?
No, I mean, I would do my rehab and work out, and that was kind of it. Was that your question, or?
Yeah, I don't know if you were special and hung around or anything to get to know the guys or anything like that, but, yeah.
No. I mean, yeah, I moved in with Ryan McLeod. So that was great. He offered to take me in right away, so it was nice to get out of the hotel. That's not, you know, the funnest place to be for a whole month, so I'm glad he you know, brought me in, and it's been great. So yeah, a lot of dinners with guys, and just spending time away from the rink too. So yeah, I've gotten to know everyone really well.
Josh, can you just I want to make sure I have this right. I know there was issues that you were trying to battle through things in Ottawa. Did you suffer a specific injury, the specific oblique thing in the Detroit game? Was that a tear suffered in that game, or were you playing with something you didn't realize it was torn? How did that go?
No, it was aggravated. I had done it way before that, and then it just kind of kept compounding every game. And it wasn't bad. Like when I came back, it felt, you know, pretty good. But I wasn't 100%. And with an injury like that, it's, you know, the risk of coming back early is re-aggravating it. And it was just kind of accumulation of games. It wasn't necessarily just one game.
Yeah, so it was just nothing happened specifically against Detroit. It was just kind of time to shut it down and rest and see what, you know.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it got to a point where it was, I felt like I would have been out longer. So just kind of had to pull the plug.
What do you see as the future? I mean, you've played against a lot of these guys who are now your teammates, and you've watch them now here as teammates. What do you see as the future now when you all get back here in October, trying to move forward and trying to get this team towards the playoffs?
I mean, obviously, just getting back to having a winning culture, and just something that, you know, you work towards every day. It doesn't come overnight. But I think, you know, especially the core guys and guys who've been here for a long time, I think they're fed up with losing. And, you know, I know the city is too, and the fans. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, internally, we want to, you know, change this, and we will. So that's definitely something that we'll think about all summer for sure.
That was Sabre center Josh Norris as one of the plenty of interviews that we have from Locker Cleanout Day. We'll come back. Brian, Joe, and I will recap the hour with the round table closing up here and approximately at 4:30 is what we're hoping. Kevin Adams and Lindy Ruff will talk with the media. This is Sports Talk Center. You're listening to WGR. All right, last segment of the 3 o'clock hour here, and we'll end it with a little bit of a roundtable fashion. Derek Kramer, Brian Koziel, Joe Kelly, all here with you. And I think I'm going to end it with this. I'm going to ask each of you guys this question, and it's more or less going to be something that I'm going to steal inspiration from Joe DiBiase when I was on the morning show on Thursday.
Okay.
If a time traveler would show up to the three of us right now and say that the Buffalo Sabres finally made it to the playoffs next year, how does it get done? Brian, I will start with you.
Okay. Well, this good stretch of hockey that they had at the end of the season, I think, was strongly aided by good goaltending from James Reimer. If you look at the Stanley Cup winners over the last 3-4 seasons, they still have had very, very, very good goaltending. And I'm going to say that it's because Devon Levi comes up and plays great. So that's how they're going to get it done. Now, obviously, a lot of other things have to happen, but I think Tage Thompson still scoring in the 40s and Alex Tuch still scoring in the 30s, like, that has to happen. But I'm going to say as the year's going on, why the Sabres make the playoffs, what would we be talking about? We would be talking about the fact that Devon Levi has really, really blossomed into a number one goaltender. So that's how it's going to happen. Buffalo's going to get great goaltending, and it's going to be because Levi rides them to the playoffs.
Joe?
I would have to concur with that. I'm going to go a different direction, but Levi coming up and really turning things around in the goaltending area really makes the most sense. I think Lindy Ruff, I'm going to go the coaching angle here on the second year. They've got the vibes right in that locker room right now. The mentality towards the end of the season really improved, and those guys were fighting for each other. Yeah, it didn't go the way you would exactly want in their final few games, win-loss-wise, but I think the base is there. So if they can implement that, a few coaching changes are made. Lindy gets some hand picks, and it's really his mantra through and through, right? His coaching staff. I think that universal message through the locker room, not the pieces of a different coaching staff. I think that can help turn things around and really get those guys in gear and, you know, maybe throw in a top four defenseman to pair with Owen Power as well. Get some solid defense play.
I think it's going to come down to this, and it is Kevin Adams knows that he cannot sit and expect the same core to do things properly. Moves will have to be made, and a lesson has to have been learned over the last two off seasons where they've done relatively nothing. So a bigger move has to be made. A swing for a player, be it a top four defenseman or even a top six forward, in any way that you find a capacity to do so, that is going to be the way it happens. There's got to be aggression from the front office to aid this group. If you want to help them and you believe in them, get them a piece to help get them over the top. So that's the way I think it's going to end up happening.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, it does look like there's still plenty of sound. It looks like Joe and I, it's curtains for myself and Joe Kelly. But fear not, Brian Koziel on the other side will take you the rest of the way again, hopefully, Brian, you're not waiting too long for Adams enough here.
We Paul just checked in and said he thinks everything's going to be on time, if not even maybe a hair earlier. So that's great.
Love that.
And
for you.
You guys did great work all day here handling the end of the Sabre season. So kudos to your efforts. And like I said, next year, just be prepared, as you know, because that's what the theme of this segment is, right?
Yes.
Just next year, be prepared to, you know, be going literally after I'm done with Tee to Green at 8 a.m. for pregame of game one, like all the way till puck drop at 7 o'clock.
So right, I will gladly carry the torch for you there on that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for the day that our program director, Alan Davis, has a difficult decision to make on what do we do with the NFL draft coverage?
Yeah.
Seriously,
so,
yeah.
One day,
he's going to have to make a very tough choice.
Yes. And you know what? It's funny. I mean, we sit here and, you know, kind of half kid about the fact that, you know, oh, it's such a long day for us.
You know,
it is, obviously, you know, when you're on the radio, it's taxing. When it's game one, every single one of our hosts is going to be lining up to say, give me an hour here to host. Like, just because we'll be so energized to talk about something different at a playoff game. I think it'll be a grand time. So hopefully we'll have that next year.
Hopefully that is a problem for Alan next year.
Yes, I agree.
All right. Thank you, Brian. We'll let you get things going here and can't wait to hear what you and Paul have to say regarding everything after the fact.
Yeah, after the press conference is over, Paul Hamilton is going to join me for a little reflection on these last 2 days, as well as what I'm sure we're going to get some, you know, good stuff from what Lindy and Kevin have to say. So, that's coming up shortly here. If we have to wait a little longer for the press conference, we'll continue to replay some of these exit interviews, but we'll have the press conference upcoming at some point during the next hour, and then Paul after it's over for his thoughts on what was said. So stay tuned right here on WGR. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
More Brian Koziel coming up next here as Sports Talk Saturday carries on. This is WGR.